When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 425, and today we are talking about books being released on August 8th, 2023, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Vanessa Diaz, and we're coming to you from BookRiot.com. Vanessa, hello!
Hey, Lib. How are you?
Oh, you know, here I am.
Here we are.
Every week. Here I am.
Good.
I made it through another week.
Somehow, some way, we made it.
Yeah. We are recording this a day later than we had planned because my cat was horribly behaved. Oh, my goodness. And there was chaos and vets and all kinds of stuff. But he's fine now. He's fine. But I had to, like, stay up and watch him the last few nights. So I was very sleepy. But then that's what I was going to tell you. I was saying to you before we started recording, I wanted to tell you something.
Yes.
Yesterday, around the time we were going to record, we got giant thunderstorms.
Oh.
And pouring rain. It was so loud in my office.
What?
And I was like, oh. Of course, if we had recorded then, it probably wouldn't have happened.
It wouldn't have happened. I know. That's the way it always goes.
But yeah. Which was good because we've needed it. It said it was going to rain every day for like the last month and it hasn't.
It hasn't.
So that was good. So, how are things on the other side of the country?
They're actually quite beautiful. I'm like a little knocking on, wood surfaces because we haven't had a wildfire season here. We haven't had any fires really in Oregon that I like know of, at least not ones that made the news. So the summer has been very like 80s and gorgeous. It's definitely a little more humid than I'm used to early in the morning, but it's been just such great weather for like going outside and doing stuff, which is also why I sound a little bit congested because all this nature is kind of ravaging my nose, but it's still worth it. So yeah, things are pretty good besides that. Life is beginning to normalize a little bit, which is great.
Well, speaking of your corner of the country.
Oh, yes.
Our episode is number 425 today, and the corresponding area code is a Washington State area code that includes the northern and eastern suburbs of Seattle.
It is.
I have never been to Seattle. Have you ever been to Seattle?
Oh my gosh, yeah, several times. And that was before I moved here. Yeah, I really like Seattle.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go. I mean, I've been on the West Coast very little, but one of our rioters was posting a photo in Seattle on Instagram the other day, and like, there's the needle in the background, just like sticking way up above everything else.
Yep, it's just there.
And it just seemed like so alien. I was like, do you ever get used to seeing that like around? Because I guess when you're close to it, you don't really notice it, right?
But, yep.
You know, from far away, I was like, it looks like some kind of alien structure has landed over the city. Like, how cool is that? You know?
And it's huge. So yeah, when you're near it, it's very like, whoa. Like, not that I've never been around a big structure before, but everything about the shape, the design is very, like UFO.
Yeah.
It's great.
I mean, everything I know about Seattle is from Frasier and Singles, I think, is basically all I know of it. But like, you can go in it, right? It's like, is that the one that has like the revolving restaurant at the top?
I believe so, yeah. I've never made it because all the people I've gone with are like terrified of heights. Like, it just so happens like the three people I've been there with. I would love it, but yeah, it's a really cool city. There's a lot of fun stuff to do, and it's obviously Pike Place is really fun, and I don't know, it's cool. Lots of good coffee.
Right, Pike Place. Okay, I take it back. Everything I know about Seattle, I know from Frasier, Singles, and Macklemore.
And yeah, never change.
Yeah, I don't know if I would want to go up in that. When we were at BEA in Chicago.
Ooh.
Chicago? Yeah. We went to the top floor of the Sears Tower. We got invited to a party, like a bunch of us from Book Riot. And I was like, oh yeah, that's fine. But then once I got up there, everybody's like, come stand on this spot where you can look down. And I was like, no, thank you.
I would like to not do that.
No thanks.
That's okay.
So I was like kind of proud of myself that I went all that way up, because I am afraid of heights, but no windows, please.
There's plenty of things on the ground that are here for you to enjoy, so you're okay.
Seriously. So, I like it on the ground. Don't want to go under, in the water, don't want to go up. I like it right here, in the middle.
I would like to be in an open field.
Yes, nothing around me, nothing that can fall on me, nothing I can fall out of.
Just no like water.
The ground all the time, please. So, before we start talking about books, which we are going to do.
We promise.
We're going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Song of the Silk's Realms by Judy I. Lin. Xu Wei is a talented young musician who was orphaned at a young age. Her sole family is a kindly uncle, but then her uncle is killed, and she is, of course, devastated. With no family and no patron, Xu Wei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to perform for the enigmatic Duke Meng. He surprises Xu Wei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly more sus when he and Xu Wei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. It's like, what? What's going on here? So this book is a sweeping epic romantasy that follows a talented young musician who is swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke. And who doesn't want to be swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke? She's living all our dreams, honestly. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Song of the Six Realms by Judy I. Lin for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleen Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world. It kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or if The Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, and I meant to open my notes, but instead I just opened Skype, so that was fun. I've been using a computer for, 20 years now? I still am not any good at clicking the right buttons the first time.
You know.
It's like, it's fine.
There's always that regression where you do a thing long enough that you're like, what?
Yeah.
It's fine.
I'm also, like, a super clicker. Like, I'm like, click, 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 click. As soon as, like, I can click on things and, like, it doesn't, sometimes it, like, freezes things. And I haven't learned from that either.
I believe in you.
Thank you. But now I have my notes up. And before I tell you about my first pick, I'm going to remind you about tailored book recommendations. If you want to escape the dog days of summer with perfect book recommendations, and now I'm going to make a joke that I also made on the When in Romance podcast, cats and dog references in one sentence living together, let tailored book recommendations pick awesome books to keep you entertained. Touch grass, like we were talking, in the middle of a field with nothing around. Grab some lemonade and enjoy TBR's picks. They are great for readers of all stripes, and they have plans for all budgets. So visit mytbr.co to sign up today. It only takes a few minutes. That's mytbr.co. All right. I want to remind people, because we always say it at the end of the show, but I don't know. You know, maybe we should say it at the beginning of the show. If you have a question for us, you want to ask us some burning question, you can reach us at allthebooks@bookriot.com. That is our email. And on to the books. My first book for today is Whale Fall by Daniel Krauss. This is an intense novel about a young diver who is stuck inside an 80-foot whale. This is going to be scary and intense, and it really was. Like, for me, especially, because I'm afraid of the ocean. But it's fantastic. This is about a young man named Jay, In the present day, Jay is 17. He's living in Monterey, California, which is known for Cannery Row by John Steinbeck, which is his best novel, in my opinion, and for its marine life and its oceans. And there's, you know, chartered, you know, whale watching tours and divers and just all the stuff going on the ocean there. He is also the son of Mitt, who is a famed diver and all-around knowledgeable legend. He's always seen on the piers. He's always seen on the boats. He's got all these stories about diving, and everyone around is just, like, in awe of him, except for Jay. Jay has a very contentious relationship with his father. His father bullies him a lot. He thinks that Jay is soft, and from a very young age, he forces him to go with him diving and out on boats and makes him learn all about the ocean and diving and boats and marine life when Jay would really just rather, like, hang out and do things on his own. He has two older sisters who his father doesn't make do any of these things, and his older sisters think his father is great, whereas Jay hates his dad. As Jay gets older, he realizes, like, he fears and hates his dad. And when he is 15 years old, there is an incident between the two of them, and Jay leaves home. This is also at the start of the pandemic. And shortly after that, he gets word from his mother and his sisters that his father is dying from cancer, and he should come home and talk to him, say goodbye, but Jay decides not to. He doesn't return home. And his father does indeed die, but he actually dies by suicide. He goes off a boat. And so before I continue, there is a lot of talk of suicide in this book. So if, you know, just go carefully into that. So now that Jay's father has died, he is an outcast because people think, like, Mitt was this great, great man, and Jay was the son who ignored him and didn't say goodbye to him, and people spit at him on the street. And Jay is like, you know, nobody knows the real story about our relationship. And so a year after Mitt's death, Jay decides he's going to redeem himself in everyone's eyes by diving for his father's remains. There is a spot where Mitt went in the water. There's lots of rocks. There's lots of kelp. It's entirely possible, because he was never recovered, that he could find his dad's remains. This is, however, a very dangerous area to dive alone. There's super, super tall kelp. There's a severe drop not very far off the shore. Jay hasn't dived in 2 years, but he remembers everything that he was taught. It's like riding a bicycle. So he goes into the water. He doesn't tell anybody he's doing this. And soon after he submerges, he gets to ride around the drop. He encounters a giant squid. And holy cats, how amazing. Like, very few giant squid have been seen alive. Sometimes they wash up, sometimes they're caught in nets, but they're very hard to see. And here is this 30-foot giant squid, which has the largest eyes of anything in the world. But just as, like, Jay is, like, taking this in with all this delight and awe, his wonder turns to horror when he realizes that right behind the squid is an 80-foot sperm whale who gobbles up the squid along with Jay. Jay has now been swallowed by a 60-ton creature. And looking at his gauge, he has an hour of oxygen left. And can he get out? He must draw on the knowledge he learned from his father. You know, it's not nice in there. It's not a lot of fun. It's not like you see in Pinocchio. There's not a lot of room. And he's in there. He's panicking. He's injured. He starts having this conversation in his head with his dad. While he is being crushed and tossed around and pushed along the whale's digestive tract. And it looks like his search for his dead father is going to bring about his own end. The irony is not lost on him, nor is the fact that he wanted to get away from his old man, who wouldn't stop talking at him and telling him things, and now he is trapped in an old whale, having to listen to it, both its body and its rhythms, and the voices that he's hearing while he's in there. In between the present day, we get flashbacks to Jay and his dad, different stages in their lives. It's a story of complicated family and loss and independence and survival. There are no documented cases of anyone ever surviving being swallowed by a whale, or even any cases of people having been swallowed by a whale, because it's not like they're getting back out or people are finding out that this happened. People in the news, occasionally they say, are swallowed by a whale, and I say that in quotes because you've probably seen those YouTube videos of kayakers and people on surfboards. They're actually grabbed in a whale's mouth, but the whale is like, this is not something I want, and they spit them out. No one's actually been known to have been swallowed by a whale, of which only the sperm whale, which is the whale that Jay is swallowed by, is large enough to actually really do that. But the rest of the book, you know, if this were to happen, is as scientifically accurate as Daniel Krauss could make it. He did tons of research. He consulted tons of specialists. I mean, you're going to learn all about the inside of a whale, every little part of it, and what makes it tick, and all it's, you know, this whale has 4 stomachs, and it's just so interesting. I do want to give content warnings. Like I said, there is a mention of suicide several times in this book. Also, substance abuse, sexism, bullying, emotional abuse, trauma, child neglect, cancer, and loss of a parent. Lots and lots of dead sea animals, because the whale keeps swallowing things. And also body horror, because not only the jays, but also the whales. But it's one of a kind. It's really interesting and fascinating and intense. It is Whale Fall by Daniel Krauss.
That cover alone gives me all of the ocean creep, like in a good way.
But right?
I'm like, that is, I grew up in California, as I think I've said many times, but like a thing we often do as a field trip when you're a kid in California is going whale watching. And mm-hmm. I remember everybody being super fascinated, and just me being that kid in the corner was like, the sheer size of these things is terrifying. Right. And they weren't even sperm whales, you know, they were much smaller, but they're just so big that they can hurt you by, you know, playing. Oh my God, I can't. So yeah, this looks really good.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also, I should say another thing about this book is that it's a look at how we are, you know, of course, always destroying nature. And killing mm-hmm. off everything around us. You know, like this whale is 80 feet. He didn't mean to eat this guy. And, you know, he's gentle and they don't usually come to the surface unless they're old. And, you know, it's another great book in a long list that I've read recently about why we need to take care of the ocean, which I went on a little rant last week about.
The more you know.
That's right.
Yep, I love it. We're doing Educational Corner. I'm going to take us also to a body of water in an extremely different direction with my pick. So my pick is Looking Glass Sound by Katriona Ward. This was my first time reading Katriona Ward, which I finally learned how to pronounce her name. I believe I had been accidentally calling her Katriona for years. But Katriona is the author of The Last House on Needless Street, is probably like the most famous, at least that I know of. Also wrote Sundial, a couple other books. But this was my first time finally picking up her work. This book kind of messed with my brain in a good way, but a really like layered way where I had to go back, and especially because I audiobooked this, and read like the end 2 more times to really grasp it. So just warning that it is a thing you have to like kind of pay attention to. Not that you shouldn't pay attention to books while you're reading them, but I feel like describing why is kind of a spoiler, but not, and the copy synopsis of the book like almost doesn't do it justice. I'm going to describe it the way I think is most helpful. So the book opens in 1989, where we meet Wilder Harlow, who is sort of like a lonely, friendless teen who is summering with his parents in this town on the coast of Maine called Whistler Bay. And what brought Wilder and his family here is that his uncle has died and left them, like his family, this house here on the coast of Maine. So that's where he meets two other teens, this handsome local named Nathan Pelletier, who goes by Nat, and Harper, who is a girl from like a really wealthy British family who vacations here during the summers. And the three become inseparable pretty quickly. Nat and Wilder both confess to each other to having a crush on Harper, but they value each other's friendship so much that they make this little pact that they're never going to act on it. So instead, the three become these, you know, three amigos who go about walking around the town, swimming, exploring, and bonding over the legend of someone called the Dagger Man, who is a killer who is known to have gone on like a streak here in Whistler Bay, who leaves behind these really creepy Polaroids of kids, like really threatening, where he has like a knife to their necks while they're sleeping sort of thing, but doesn't actually hurt the kids, and it's never been caught. So the summer ends, and it's really quite sweet. Like, I know I just described this like gruesome thing, but like this is the killings themselves, like, are very kind of off the page, and like they talk about the legend, but in a way that's a little bit removed. And overall, the first half of this book is just so entrenched in that really sweet summer fleeting feeling when you're young and you're, you know, with your friends on like a seaside town, and just that that sense of like youth plus summer, and it was really kind of nice to read about, even with that, you know, legend of the Dagger Man kind of looming in the background. And so the summer's coming to an end, and they make another pact between the three of them, which is that they're going to like come back to the summer every summer so they can, you know, continue their friendship and like, you know, hang out in Whistler Bay. But the friends make a startling and really gruesome discovery that will change their lives forever. And now what we've been reading, which the copy sets this up, and like the, you know, description of the book basically sets you up to like not what they're talking about is this point, which is literally halfway through the book, which is that we find out that Wilder, what we've been reading is Wilder's unpublished memoir. This is like decades later. He is now has gone back to Maine to like write his story. And that was kind of my issue, because if you're just going off the description, it just sort of sounds like that's what you know from the beginning. But again, I'm telling it to you in a way that I think makes sense without spoiling stuff. But again, decades later, he's going to write this story. But the more he writes, the less he kind of trusts himself and his memory, because things are happening. Like, he's maybe hallucinating. He's seeing things that can't be there, like notes from a friend who is absolutely dead, and a woman drowning and calling for help in the water that, like, the Coast Guard is like, no, there was no one, like, you're just wasting our time. There's chunks of this book that he'll go back and, like, find as he's writing this story that he does not remember writing. So, like, what is going on? This book was a definite lesson for me in the idea that horror is subjective, and that one of the reasons I had not read horror for a long time is because I think I thought horror meant one thing, like this very, you know, graphic, gruesome, haunting stuff on the page. And this book is definitely haunting, but in this like slow way that kind of crept up on me, that was low and kind of chilling. There is, as I mentioned, like a book within a book. And so that whole last part of the book, I really had to pay attention and go back and rewind, because there were some pieces that I was like, oh, wait, oh, okay. Reality gets blurred. It was really just an interesting experience. And it made me, as I think I've said a couple times, just really interested to keep reading more and more horror, because I'm finding myself so like enjoying it so much, and the different things that it can be and represent, all based on like the mood and tempo of the story. So yeah, it was a great foray into her work. I definitely want to go back and read some of the rest of her stuff. That's Looking Glass Sound by Katrina Ward.
All right. I'm going to take us in a completely different direction now with this wonderful collection of essays called Congratulations, the Best is Over! Essays by R. Eric Thomas. If his name sounds familiar, that's because this is his second essay collection. His first essay collection was called Here for It, which I know we've talked about on Book Riot like a million times because we love it. It's really wonderful. This one is just as great and funny and smart, and it kind of details living in the middle, like your midlife. Like, he's in his 40s now, and it's about the unexpected things that life continually throws at you. He is a writer. He has written for TV shows and sites. His husband is a minister. They met right before 2016. And he discusses the political climate of 2016 in his book, around when he was writing his first book, the depression that he fell into, his life with his husband, a hike that they go on, the new apartment that they get. There's talk of loss of a parent, his unexpected return to his hometown, which includes attending his class reunion, where it starts off with them giving him his badge and it has someone else's photo on it with his name, an essay about having to go to the ER. These can be very serious subjects. They can be very light subjects. He tends to be very light and sometimes flip even about the most serious topics, which is how some people deal with trauma and grief. You know, the sort of morbid sense of humor or making light of it. There is this great quote in the upcoming Emily Austin novel, Interesting Facts About Space, or at least I think it's great, that I wrote down about, because I tend to have a morbid sense of humor. And the character says something, you know, morbid, and then they say, it's a coping mechanism. It takes the darkness out at the knees. And I really liked that. And that's kind of what he's doing here. You know, he's taking the darkness out at the knees. They're very thoughtful, you know, he's explaining, like, life is passing us by, like, for some reason we keep forgetting that, and this is how we're choosing to spend it, and is this the way that we should be spending it, you know, and especially how the last several years have brought those thoughts to the forefront of our minds, consciously or not. You know, especially like with a pandemic where a lot of people died. So like I said, this is actually a really funny book. I know nothing I've just said sounds funny, but it really is. It's a great book to read all at once or one essay at a time. I do want to give content warnings for depression and anxiety, loss of a parent, and grief. This is Congratulations, the Best is Over, essays by R. Eric Thomas.
Okay, so my next pick was such a riot. It's Shigiri and the Brass Head of Obolophon by Wole Talabi. Again, a ride. Just such a ride. Which is, well, let me not tell you that part. Let's start at the actual beginning. So the book opens with a car chase across, it's in London, but it's the spirit side of London. So we're doing some world building from the very beginning. And this main character, Shigiri, is bleeding out in the back seat of a cab. We know that he and his companion that's, you know, in the cab with him are on the run. And we know that, you know, whatever's happening is bad because, you know, you don't get to be bleeding in the backseat of a cab for good reasons. And they're on the run, but we don't really know, like, why or who from exactly. And then we flash all the way back to the beginning and get, we're kind of, like, building forward with this story. And we get to know who Shigiri and Noma are. So Shigiri is sort of an anti-hero. He is a former nightmare god who worked for something called the Orisha Spirit Company, where his job is to serve out dreams that kill people in their sleep for those that pray to him. Orishas, for anybody who don't know or who doesn't know, are spirits that play a key role in the Yoruba, like, faith, the spiritual practice of, like, West Africa and several religions in the African diaspora. So we're definitely solidly in, like, African mythology, spiritualism, folklore, etc., which, you know, right up my alley. And so Shigiri, again, is working for the spirit company, and, like, where we are now is such that, like, people just don't pray to gods the way that they used to, and the gods, you know, literally get their life from prayer offerings, and so they, like, have to do these things for prayers in order just to kind of get by, and that is what Shigiri is doing. And so he's on one of these killer dream missions when he meets Noma, who is Noma is there, and he is there, and they're both trying to do a thing to a person. And Noma is this gorgeous, sensual succubus with a secretive and, like, long past who is like, nope, you can't have this soul, we'll just say. Like, I want this one, you can't have it. And they're arguing over it because he's there again to, unfortunately, do a bad thing to a woman because that's what he has to do. And so she makes him an offer. She's like, you can't like living this way, always in the debt of these, you know, Orisha spirits. So let me help you break free of this life and this debt and this obligation. And they have a whole back and forth, and Shigiri eventually just agrees to it. It's like, yeah, okay, why not? And, like, goes with her, and they become, like, lifelong companions, and he is essentially she's training him to also be, like, a succubus. But, you know, of course, freedom has its price. And so one day, while on a beach, they're approached by this god, Olorun, who has come asking for a quote-unquote favor, like a favor that they can't afford to say no to. Knowing that they can't say no, they agree to basically lift this ancient Nigerian talisman from the British Museum and to do it in just a few hours. So it's dangerous, it's impossible, it's a whole heist. They could get caught by the spirit bureaus, like all kinds of bad things could happen, but of course they have to do it, and that is sort of like the absolute ride that, you know, we go on is all rooted in this, like, favor that they have to do. All kinds of magic, all kinds of know-how. The magic here, which is, you know, maybe this is implied because I did indeed mention that one of these people is a succubus, but it's sex magic. So there was a lot more, like, sex on the page than I was originally prepared for. But it's great. You know, it's a great book. It's definitely violent. It's got really, really cool world building and takes us to different places. Like, we're in London and then Lagos, Nigeria, and then Singapore. And again, it's all this really cool take on Nigerian mythology and spiritualism and folklore in a way that is great because I'm constantly trying to kind of expand beyond the Greco-Roman, you know, mythology. So such a fun story. Trigger warnings for, again, violence, because there's plenty of that. And if you are not a person who likes sex on the page, then it's definitely there. But it's, yeah, it was such a fun book. I would definitely like to hear more from this author. So that is Shigiri and the Brass Head of Obolophon by Wole Talabi.
All right. I think I have that one around here somewhere. So those are today's releases that we have read. Now we are going to talk about more of today's releases in hardcover and paperback that we're excited about but haven't necessarily read. My first pick is Shark Heart, A Love Story by Emily Habeck. I really wanted to read this one. It has an ocean theme. you know, I'm going with that this summer. I couldn't get the file to open when I originally received it. I just received it again on Wednesday, but then everything went sideways with My Little Shark. So I haven't read it yet, but it's getting compared to Our Wives Under the Sea and Mrs. Caliban. And I'm very excited to start it. It is a debut novel of speculative fiction about a young couple who are only a year into their marriage. Their names are Ren and Lewis. And they're a year into their marriage when they learn that Lewis has a rare disease. And that disease is going to slowly transform him into a great white shark. Which sounds kind of cool, but is probably alarming if it's happening to you. And in between the diagnosis and their feelings and fears about when it starts to happen and what they're going to do, we also get memories of Ren's past. It sounds amazing. It's possibly my favorite cover of the year. It has a shark made out of flowers on it. It's just unbelievably gorgeous. And I'm probably going to read it as soon as we're done recording today, so I can include it in the newsletter for next week. So that is Shark Heart, A Love Story by Emily Habeck. And now we are going to hear from our other sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawke, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books and all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters, and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawke on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Gallery Books. So Anna Green thought she was marrying Liam West for access to subsidized family housing while at UCLA, which is an interesting reason to marry someone, but you know, in this economy. So anyway, she signed divorce papers when the graduation caps were tossed and she thought she was done. She wasn't. 3 years later, Anna is a starving artist living paycheck to paycheck while West is a Stanford professor. Now he is part of a conglomerate. His family owns this mega grocery store chain. He's not interested in working for them, but he is interested in those greenbacks, honey, that come in the form of a $100 million inheritance. To get it, he has to be married for 5 years. That's where our girl Anna comes back into play. So the two will fake a marriage, but as he gets to know her and gets to appreciate the feisty, foul-mouthed, paint-splattered girl that she is, he'll begin to wonder if the money is worth the love of his life. Pick up The Paradise Problem by Christina Lauren to find out if it is. And thanks again to Gallery Books for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, Vanessa, you're up.
I am. So I'm so excited about this book. So my next pick is Blonde Identity by Allie Carter. I totally, I'm super being 100% honest here. I picked up the book because I just saw the cover. It gave me like Finley Donovan vibes. Yeah, those are words. That other book. And I was like, oh, this looks fun. And I loved the title because I am a giant fan of what I call like fizz bang boom movies. So, you know, everything from like the Mission Impossible movies to like the Jason Bourne movies. So I was like, oh, that sounds like The Bourne Identity. How cute. And like moved on, but like didn't think it had anything to do with that, except it kind of does. So it's this woman wakes up in the middle of the night in Paris and has no memory. And so she has this like splitting headache. And then the super hot guy is standing over her telling her to run. And there's people trying to kill her. So she's this, you know, if you've seen or read anything about the Bourne movies and books, like that's Jason wakes up, has no idea like who he is, just knows that people are trying to kill him and that he's got like quite a skill set. So she doesn't know what's going on, and but she does see footage of herself fighting off like a dozen men, and she can't figure out like, well, who am I? What am I doing? But this guy is that, you know, woke her up or that told her she needs to run is like, no, I know you think you're a spy, but you're not a spy. Your identical sister is a spy. And, you know, shenanigans ensue. So it sounds like it's definitely a romance. They end up, I think, pretending to be like a pair of lovesick newlyweds. But I just loved that kind of Jason Bourne parallel in the beginning. And I'm going to read the crap out of that book. So yeah, that is The Blonde Identity or Blonde Identity by Ally Carter.
I think I've read an Ally Carter book. She's been writing them for a while now.
Yeah, I haven't read any of her, but just plenty.
I read one about... Oh, Heist Society. That's it. Yep. I read the Heist Society trilogy about the teen thieves. I like a heist book. My other pick for today is Mr. Magic by Kirsten White. This is one of my other favorite covers of the year. It's fluorescent pink with a melting TV set on it, which is pretty rad. Kirsten White wrote one of my favorite horror novels of last year, which is called Hyde, which was set at an abandoned amusement park. There's also a graphic novel version of that coming out next month. This one, I haven't read it yet, but it is about five former child stars of a children's show called Mr. Magic that was canceled after some kind of tragic accident. But three decades later, no evidence of this show having ever existed remains other than the memories of these five former cast members. And somehow, they're going to all wind up together in a remote location where the past has come back to haunt them or possibly hunt them. I don't know, but I'm excited to read it. So this is Mr. Magic by Kirsten White.
All right. And then my other pick that I have not read yet is Kiss the Girl by Soraya Cordova. And this one actually came out last week on the 1st. This is the third installment in the Meant to Be collection, the first two of which were The Shoe Fits, which was a Cinderella story by Julie Murphy, and then By the Book, which was kind of a Beauty and the Beast theme story by Jasmine Guillory. So you can, you know, obviously sense the theme here. And I love the approach on this one. So this time we get one of my favorite authors take on The Little Mermaid, which I love because I'm very deep in my Little Mermaid nostalgia era after having recently seen the, you know, the live action adaptation with Halle Bailey. Our main character here is Ariel del Mar, which I just love that name. And she is one of the most famous singers in the world. And she's in a band with her sisters. It's a very well-known band. The sisters and their band, I should say, is called The Siren Seven. Like, I just love everything about this. And they've been like a total pop culture phenomenon since they were kids. They wear like sequined costumes. Ariel wears her iconic red wig. And, you know, it's a whole thing. And here's where I'm going to just read the copy because they definitely went for it here, where she's like, anyone would think she's a girl who has everything, but lately she wants more. So yeah, here's the little earwig for you. But the band Siren 7 is wrapping up their farewell tour, and Ariel is very excited to spend, like, to finally get to just live a normal life, like a world that she's only ever seen from the outside. So it's an interesting take on the, like, outside world thing. But her dad, who is the head of Atlantica Records, doesn't want her to do that. He actually wants her to have a breakout solo career that he wants to, like, get started on right away. But wouldn't you know, Ariel, when she is, like, out on the town, crosses paths with this guy named Eric Reyes, who is this, like, dreamy lead singer of an up-and-coming band who doesn't know who she is and invites her to, like, go on the road for the summer. And she, of course, does that and disobeys her father. So anyway, really, really great take on it, I think. And I can't wait to read it because I just love everything that Soraya does. So that's Kiss the Girl by Soraya Cordova.
All right. So those are books that we are excited about. And now it's time for a few paperback releases coming out today, both paperback originals and in hardcover. First, the ones coming out in hardcover, a bunch of Book Riot favorites today, starting with The Women Could Fly by Megan Giddings, set in an America where unwed women under the age of 30 must register with the government. And a young woman who is approaching that age, trying to decide what she wants to do, while also fulfilling a request of her missing mother's will. Spells for Forgetting by Adrienne Young, about a young woman whose childhood love returns to their small town many years after he was accused of murdering her best friend. We're going to find out what really happened. Kosher Soul, The Faith and Food Journey of an African-American Jew by Michael W. Twitty. Twitty is the author of The Cooking Gene, which is a James Beard Award-winning book. And this one is another great look at the intersections of food and culture and religion and race. He's so, so great. He also just had another book about rice, I think. So if you're a Michael Twitty fan, check that one out. Mother in the Dark by Kayla Mayuri, about sisters and their relationship over the years with their mercurial mother. Moth by Melody Razek, a story of one Indian family during partition, and which is the 1947 split of Pakistan from India. The Book of Goose by Yiyun Lee, but a woman telling the story of her best friend after her friend dies. She can finally tell all their secrets now that her friend is gone. And The Night Ship by Jess Kidd, about two young people 100 years apart, one a girl shipwrecked on a Western Australian island, and a century later, a boy on the same island with his grandfather. And a few paperback originals today. 101 Horror Books to Read Before You're Murdered by Sadie Hartman. You might know Sadie better as Mother Horror. She's on Twitter and Instagram and I believe TikTok. She's very famous for her horror book recommendations and love, and this is a book of recommendations. Tomb Sweeping, Stories by Alexandra Chang. Chang wrote a novel I absolutely loved a few years ago called Days of Distraction. And this is a story collection. I haven't read it yet, but I'm very excited for it, so I'm just going to read you the publisher's description. It is a playful and deeply effective short story collection about the histories, technologies, and generational divides that shape our relationships. The Handyman Method, A Story of Terror by Nick Cutter and Andrew F. Sullivan. You might know Cutter, who wrote The Troop and The Deep. Sullivan has a few books as well, most recently the post-apocalyptic novel The Marigold. This one is about a family that moves into an unfinished housing development and the weird instructions that are given to them by the handyman. It's a home improvement horror novel. I guess you would call it DIY. Sorry. Not sorry. And the last one, I'm really excited to read this. I can't wait to get my hands on this one. It's called Pet by Catherine Chidji, about a young girl at a school in New Zealand in the 1980s. It is being compared to Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson, the movie Heavenly Creatures, and Picnic at Hanging Rock, the author of which I forget, but it was a Peter Weir movie. It was a remake. It scared the hell out of me as a child, the original. So I'm very excited to pick up that one. So, Vanessa, what are you going to read next?
In addition to Blonde Identity, I am reading, or about to read, I'm very excited because I've heard it hyped by a bunch of people, including, I think, last week's show, The Trap by Catherine Ryan Howard, which is that, like, really thrilling book about a woman who's, it's set in Ireland, and, like, her sister went missing, and she's, like, the third woman to go missing in, like, a short amount of time, and she's, like, haunted by what happened to her sister because she's never been, you know, no one knows what happened to her, and she's working at in the missing persons unit at the local police and just having a hard time of it. And then we also were hearing from a serial killer who is narrating or telling a story to a woman in his trunk. I was told not to start it at night. I'm just super excited to read it though. I really like Catherine Ryan Howard. And then I'm still working on the absolute chonker that is The Sun and the Void by Gabriela Romero La Cruz. It's big and I have a lot of other reading to do. So I'm kind of just chipping away at it 10-15 minutes before bed, but enjoying it so far. So yeah, that's what I'm reading.
I read The Trap. It's really good.
That's why I knew it was you. Oh, I can't wait to read it. Yeah, I'm gonna do that today.
Yeah, you've combined your characters though. I mean, you haven't read it, so you know. There's a woman whose sister is missing, and then there is a woman who works for the missing.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, thank you.
And so they're the two main characters besides a serial killer who is telling the story.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes.
Yeah, it's really dark. Really dark. I've read several of her books, and this might be the darkest, which is saying something because...
Ooh, yeah. I've read 56 Days recently and really liked it, so I was, excited to this, but I'll definitely do the lights on for this one.
Yeah, it's fun. So I'm going to read Sharkheart, I think, as soon as we get off the podcast phone. And I'm also reading Rainbow Black by Maggie Thrash, which comes out on March 19th of next year, which is set in New Hampshire in the 1990s and is about a teen girl whose family owns a daycare center and there's a satanic panic in the area. And then I'm also going to read The Stone Home by Crystal Hannah Kim, which comes out April 2nd of next year, because I loved her last novel, If You Leave Me. So that's what I've got coming up next. And then all plans will change as soon as I walk out the office door. And I'm like, oh, I've decided I'm in the mood for a comic about raccoons or something. You never know. As soon as I move my head, it's like an Etch-a-Sketch, and I'm like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
what was I going to read? Yeah. That's all right, though. It's a great problem to have.
Yes.
Because yay, books. So that is it for us today, book lovers. Thank you for joining us as always. We want to give a shout out to our sponsors. Thank you to them. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. Ask us your burning questions about sharks or Seattle, or tell us stories about Seattle and your time in the very tall alien spaceship. If you want to find us online, Vanessa, where do you hang out?
Mostly on Instagram at BuenosDiasSD.
Okay, and I am mostly on Instagram at FriendsAndComesAlive. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is you get your podcast and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us. Don't forget to visit mytbr.co to sign up today for our tailored book recommendations. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time. But you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.